We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
It is my pleasure to welcome all of you to Science of Reading Week. For those of you who may not know us, we are Lexia, a Cambium brand, and we offer a comprehensive suite of science reading-based literacy solutions, as well as evidence-based assessment and intervention solutions from Voyager Sophris Learning. I am your host, Cassandra Wheeler, Director of Letter State Success with Lexia. I've been here all week. I've had a ball. And if you've been here with me all week, thank you so much. I feel like I'm Cousin Cassandra again at this point. We've been kicking off this star-studded lineup of presenters, and today will be no different. Wonderful to see all of you. We have just been thrilled because this has been our second annual educational event devoted to the science of reading. You see, we're serious about that science of reading, right? We've been learning from some of the most respected minds in the national literacy community and celebrating the brilliant, dedicated work of all of you educators that are out there implementing structured literacy in classrooms all across the country. We thank you, we thank you, we thank you. And to our partners at EdWeb, we couldn't do it without you. We so appreciate you as well. And now, for this amazing lineup of brilliant presenters, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Jessica Farmer. Yes, the Jessica Farmer, the face behind and the force behind Farmer Loves Phonics, a literacy advocate in the world of education on social media. Are you following her? Anybody? Show some love for Jessica. With a bachelor's degree from Florida International University, Jessica holds a reading endorsement in the state of Florida. Her journey into the science of reading began in 2020, spurred by the onset of, you guessed it, the pandemic. In response, she took to TikTok to create informative content aimed at assisting parents in supporting their children's learning at home. Chef's kiss to you for that, Jessica. Since then, Jessica has maintained a consistent presence on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, offering valuable resources and insights for both parents and educators. Dedicated to advancing the field of reading instruction, Jessica has expanded her knowledge through specialized training. In 2021 and 2022, she successfully completed Letters for Early Childhood and Comprehensive IMSE Orton-Gillingham. Her unwavering passion lies in making reading instruction accessible and effective for every learner. With a commitment to reaching and empowering all readers, Jessica continues to be a trusted source of guidance and support in the science of reading community. And we thank you so much, Jessica, for joining us today. Next up, we have Carrie Curto, the National Science of Reading Project Director at the Reading League. Carrie supports, look at all that love. Thank you all so much. Carrie supports work related to the upcoming TRL Compass, as well as work supporting English learners and emergent bilinguals, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, or DEIB, the curriculum evaluation guidelines, and runs communities of practice for state education agencies and faculty from educator preparation programs seeking to implement evidence-aligned practices. Carrie formerly worked as a literacy specialist at the Rhode Island Department of Education, where she led statewide efforts to implement the Rhode Island Right to Read Act, legislation that requires teacher training in the science of reading and structured literacy. Carrie is an Orton-Gillingham practitioner who works at Middlebridge School in Narragansett, Rhode Island, and Rawson Saunders School in Austin, Texas. Before her career in education, Carrie worked as a casting director in Los Angeles. She's done it all, everybody. She lives with her family in Southern Rhode Island. What a pleasure, what a pleasure, what a pleasure. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today. Jessica and Carrie are joined by Lexia's own Director of Curriculum, Julie Harris, who provides educational direction and leadership for the development of Lexia's literacy and language programs. Since beginning her career as a teacher, Julie has been driven to advance equity and expand learning opportunities by empowering educators with actionable research, curricula, and professional learning. Look at all that love she's getting. Before joining Lexia, her work in the Language Diversity and Language Development Research Group at Harvard focused on strengthening the link between research and practice. The application of this work is featured in policy briefs, scholarly articles, and practice guides, including the book Cultivating Knowledge, Building Language, Literacy Instruction for English Learners in Elementary School. Julie earned her BA from Tufts University and her Ed Masters from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. We don't play. We bring you the heavy hitters. And Julie, thank you so much for the time that you're giving us today. We're not going to waste a moment. Let's get into it. You have so much to learn from this amazing panel. And I want to start with what we already know. Let's just lay out the bare details of what we know to be true. As teachers, we all know students benefit from explicit and systematic instruction in foundational word reading skills, such as phonemic awareness, phonics, decoding, encoding, and fluency, as well as robust instruction in vocabulary, oral language, text comprehension, and writing. We know this. We also know that basing our instructional practices in the science of reading will promote success for all students, those with dyslexia or other reading difficulties, learners who are multilingual, and learners who require even more opportunities for application and advancement. We know this. And it's because this evolving body of research provides guidance for instruction and intervention across populations. We are fully aware of this. We also know the science of reading can inform literacy instruction to ensure all students are given the opportunity to become successful readers. Among the methodologies that harness the insight of the science of reading, structured literacy, an umbrella approach coined by the International Dyslexia Association, stands out as one of the most effective. We also know structured literacy is a comprehensive framework that incorporates sounds, letter patterns, word meanings, syntax, and morphology through explicit, diagnostic, cumulative, and systematic instruction, along with other essential evidence-based elements of instruction, including building robust background knowledge and addressing all components of language comprehension. Whew. So, knowing all of that, how can teachers voice their concern for lack of evidence-aligned instruction in their classrooms? When they notice there's a gap or a chasm, what do they do? How can we support them? So, Jessica, you kick us off. Then we'll go to Julie and Carrie, and we just all would love to hear all of your perspectives on this after that.
So I want to start off by saying that I am a former balanced literacy teacher, so I understand how difficult that transition can be. So put in the chat if you're a former balanced literacy teacher, because I'm right there with you. And I know the guilt and shame that comes along with learning about the science of reading for the first time. You go through all of those different feelings, and you kind of feel like you've done a disservice to your former students. And I get teary-eyed when I think about it, and I'm sure you all do as well. But I truly believe that all educators want what is best for their students. And so we are all on the same team, and us versus them mentality is not going to get us where we need to be. And so here are some steps that I took that you're welcome to emulate at your own school. So once I started learning about the science of reading, I reached out to the teachers around me, the teachers that I was close with, and I would share information in a positive way. And I would say, hey, I came across this great activity. Do you want to borrow it today? Or, hey, I read this really cool article. Can I send it to your email? And just being really friendly and excited about it and not saying, hey, you're doing everything wrong and I'm doing everything right. Because that's just going to get you in a battle and make others feel kind of bad about the decisions that they're making. So come across it in a positive way. Reach out to your literacy coach, your reading specialist, and talk to them about the changes that you want to make and why you want to make them. I know my former reading coach, and if she's watching, she had a whole little email file dedicated to my emails because I was always sending her emails about information that I came across. And she just wanted to keep all of that together so that when she had a moment, she could look over all the info I was sending her. And share the research with your administrators because they want to see that proof. So they need to understand how is this going to impact the school overall. So make sure you have that evidence to provide that to them because that's really what administrators need to know. They need to know what's the evidence behind this. And I just want to end with sharing some advice that Kareem Weaver gave during his keynote speech at the Reading League conference. And if you were there, let us know. But he said, we have to operate with love. Woohoo! Right to read, absolutely. We have to operate with love or this movement will die. And that really stuck out to me. Love needs to be the driving force. So reach out with love and caring. We're all working towards that same end goal, which is proficient readers, spellers, and writers. So drive that passion through love. So I'd love to hear what Carrie and Julie have to say as well.
That was awesome, Jessica. It really resonates with me, that idea of starting with inclusivity and assuming best intentions for everyone we're working with, because I think by and large that's exactly right. I think what I can add here is just thinking about, so coming back to that question about how teachers can be empowered to be leaders in instructional change beyond their classrooms, I think to add on to that, like a powerful approach is to get administrators and other educators grounded in our own context. So that is to say, to take our colleagues off the defense, because good intentions and we're all trying our best, is to really look at what's happening here in our own classroom. So just like you said, Jessica, not like, let's change everything. Here's the long list of everything we have to do. But instead, let's step back and just level set on what is happening at our school. What should we know about our context so that we can improve based on our own needs? And I think what it takes to learn about our own context can look at a number of things. And the first one I usually think about is the idea of assessment. So what assessments are in place and what can those assessments reveal? Are we using assessments according to their intended purpose? And are we getting a good sense of our students' strengths and needs in the domains that contribute to both word recognition skills and language comprehension skills? Thinking back to those myths Cassandra shared with us in that poll before, right? We're thinking about reading in a comprehensive way. And then looking at all that information and seeing like, what are the patterns? Looking across the grade levels and looking at particular populations, what do we see about what our students right in front of us need and how that can inform what we do? And then we compare that understanding of the school population with a strengths and gaps analysis of the curricula in place and how those curricula are being used. So what do teachers have as a platform for providing literacy instruction? And what parts of those tools are and maybe are not being used, and then compare that against research-based strong literacy curriculum rubrics, what shows us what the best things are that we can be doing. Look at that compared to our own current practices and the tools that we have. And I think lastly, in addition to assessment and kind of looking at curriculum and our current practices, is thinking about professional learning. How are we currently organizing as a school, as a group of adults who are in this together around improving practice? And where might our shared knowledge and shared approaches to teaching fit into this puzzle of what we're seeing for students and how we can better serve them? And then I think we can defer to this big science all about reading development instruction and say, here's where we are and here's where we need to be grounded in that together without pointing fingers or looking at one person being right or wrong.
I love that. Carrie, wrap us up.
Amazing. I'm like just ready to jump back into the classroom right now. Right now. But now that you've shared about the love and about bringing research into the classroom and those challenging conversations, I'll take a moment to describe some tools that hopefully will be useful to support you in these discussions. Starting first with those of you who know me and my work, no surprise, beginning with the Reading League Compass. So the Compass launched in October, and it was developed to provide direction for a variety of targeted stakeholder groups. And I wanted to uplift a quote from the administrator page because I think it's so important for both for administrators that are on the call, but also for the educators that are ready to have these discussions with those administrators. We wrote that as educators gain professional knowledge about reading instruction, it's common to hear them say, once we know better, we do better. But in order for them to do better, educators need their administrators to be committed to providing them with the resources and the support that they need. So please use that tool for yourself for discussions with your administrators. You know, what we offer resources on the Reading League Compass is to ensure that your whole system is aligned to the science of reading, right? If you're an administrator or a teacher, you have to think about knowledge building. You have to think about coaching to connect that knowledge building to practice. You have to think about aligned materials and how your system is set up to be responsive to data, like Julie said, and not just, you know, level literacy data that Dr. Matt Burns has researched and says is less reliable than a flip of a coin, but actual data that will help you understand your students, right? Leverage frameworks like the Reading Rope to understand how you're assessing students and teaching all of those core components of literacy. So whether, you know, as a teacher, if you are a lone wolf or if your school is, you know, part of a power team, hopefully of educators that are moving towards aligning the system to evidence, we hope that the Compass provides resources to help you. So I recommend you also check out the educator page of the Reading League Compass. I often say that this is the page where we all have 100 tabs open on our computer, and we tried to compile some of the best resources there for you so that you can close out some of those overwhelming tabs. But also check out other resources on there, like Louise Spear Swirling's article, Structured Literacy Practices and Typical Literacy Practices, is one in particular that I want to uplift because it's very helpful to determine whether your practices lean towards evidence aligned or not. We also at the Reading League have the defining guide that defines the science of reading, which is helpful in understanding what it is and what it is not. We have other pages of the Reading League Compass that should help with conversations, for example, the English Learner and Emergent Bilingual page, to help have conversations with folks that support the needs of your multilingual learners. We have a page for supporting educator preparation programs if you yourself are a teacher of teachers. And if you are busy in this legislative season and you are an advocate and you're speaking with policymakers and legislators, we also have a page that will offer guidance and resources for having those challenging conversations on our policymakers and state education agencies page. I also encourage you to look into joining a Reading League chapter. These are going to be your new best friends if you haven't already made those connections.
And you know they want to know about those links. So you may have to get in there and put a link in there if somebody hasn't already done it, because sometimes everybody will get it. That's all right, Jamie just did it.
Never mind.
Thank you.
Thanks,
yeah. Jamie. So go ahead while you're in this webinar, everybody, click on those links live so that you can go ahead and start filling up your web browser with all of those links so that you'll have them. Because I don't know about you, and I've been out of the classroom since the turn of the century, right? But I'm sitting here buzzing. I'm thinking about when I was in the classroom before I had an opportunity to start learning about the science of reading, before I could start impacting the first graders that I taught. And I'm sitting here buzzing because when I hear words like love, and we're hearing all of these resources, and we're, you know, what is our context? How do we start? There's a sense of urgency that all of us must have. There's a heart that we have to have for not only this great body of work, but for how we're reacting to it and how we respond to it, if we have a chance, like all of you do right now, to impact the students, to give them the best possible chance. And I always say this, you know, when we have this opportunity with the science of reading, and we talk about knowing better and doing better, what we're essentially doing is changing the life trajectories of students, because we're now giving them this lifelong skill of reading. So I'm so excited that we have teachers on this last day that really are putting the rubber on the road. So as we're going through science of reading and we're making all of these connections, we need to go ahead and start talking about this one thing, right? Because we all know that science of reading does not mean a teaching approach, right? It's not something that we just adopt. You know, people characterize it in that way. It's not something that you just do. It's easy to conflate it with phonics and not an entire body of research that informs the most effective ways to teach decoding and language comprehension. So, Jessica, I'll start with you. We love phonics too, right? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on why it's important to make sure phonics isn't a synonym for science of reading. Everybody wants to, you know, put those two things together. Why the distinction matters. Can you talk about that? And then we'll let Julie and Carrie chime in after you.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you follow my pages, you know that phonics is something that I definitely love, and I tend to focus heavily on those foundational reading skills. However, I always try to reiterate that the science of reading is definitely not a synonym for phonics. A structured literacy approach includes all of those five pillars of reading as determined by the National Reading Panel, and we want to include oral language as well, as noted at the beginning of today's session. But the reason why phonics has been at the forefront of this movement is due to the lack of explicit systematic instruction in this area. So phonics kind of went out of style. It was deemed boring. And so now there's this big push for phonics to return, because we know that it is essential, especially in the primary grades, to improve decoding, spelling, and oral reading. So yes, in the primary grades, it's going to be heavy on phonics instruction, but we can't just ignore those other pillars, or that foundation will crumble. We can't build a house on one pillar. We've got to have all of them. So don't ignore those other pillars or your house is going to fall apart, right? So here's a little quick tip. If the program you are using for foundational skills is taking up a large chunk of your reading block, you can try and incorporate learning vocabulary words through the words that you're already decoding and encoding with your students. Attach meaning to those words, use them in sentences, have discussions to work on oral language. Try not to think of these pillars as separate, but that they all actually work together for that end goal of proficiency. So that's just a little quick tip there.
I love that, Jessica. I hadn't heard it described in just that way about, like, if you focus on one pillar, the house will crumble. That is a really, that's a really strong metaphor. Thanks for sharing that with
You're
us.
You're welcome.
I was really excited when we talked about the idea of having this question on the panel, because it's something I've definitely feel strongly about, is this idea of, like, phonics as being part of the science reading, but not a synonym for it. And I think it's important to remind ourselves, just to say it kind of the same thing as Jessica, but in a different way. Let's see what sticks. To remind ourselves that we're talking about the research that describes reading when we describe the science of reading. And that includes, but is not just, the research that describes word reading, which is an important distinction. And I think for a lot of us, it can be easy to forget. But let's remember that the vastness that is truly what it means to read successfully in this knowledge-based economy, especially over time, means accessing and evaluating and synthesizing information. So effective reading requires that we bring relevant knowledge to a text, that we can apply what we know as we read and integrate new information, which is what results in learning, right? Which is the big goal in the end, or one of the big goals of reading, certainly joy in reading as well. But one big thing we need to do is read to learn. And so reading words then is necessary and crucial, but it's insufficient to support text comprehension, right? So word reading has sometimes been thought of as a gateway to comprehension, but it will not be a gateway to comprehension if the language of the text is a gatekeeper. So this is why models of reading like the Simple View and Scarborough's Rope are all so important, because it reminds us that automatic and efficient word reading is a means to an end, right? And the idea there, to build from what Jessica was saying, is that because of the impact of language comprehension on reading success, it's important for us to remember that it requires instructional attention, just like all the skills that go into word recognition. And that means starting at the earliest years. We don't want to wait until code-based skills are secure, right? It's not like one developmental milestone and then the next, because ultimately, like, the demands of text continue to increase. And if we want to prepare children for that, we need to be building all of these skills simultaneously. And we need to continue that effort through adolescence. So building language, unlike other skills, are just, they're never checked off our list. It's not done. I am a language learner still in my professional life. I am still growing and deepening my language. And so all that happens throughout schooling, needs to continue through adolescence. And it's something we do as adults. Language learning is just part of being a curious human. And it's something that we need to really be promoting for our learners.
So
they all come with that in their own yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. I just wanted to say thank you for this question. You know, it's such fake news, right? Can I say that? It's just nobody's saying from the science of reading space, nobody is saying all you need is phonics. Like, even to learn to read the words on the page, it's more than just phonics. It's blending and practice and corrective feedback and, you know, explicit systematic instruction to automaticity. It's fluency. It's encoding, right? Like, it's just such fake news. Okay. And the only people that are tweeting about it are the people that are somehow against the science of reading. I'm a very real and honest person. So let's just get that out of the way. And while I say that, I do also have to say that we say that the science of reading is not a pendulum swing, and it is not, but we do also have that pendulum in our own hands. And so as you look at your school and your practices, make sure that there is not an actual over-dedicated time to just foundational skills at the expense of something like English language development or knowledge building, right? We have to have it all, as Julie said, as Jessica said. If we think about our older students, a lot of them are struggling because of the lack of evidence-aligned literacy instruction and because of a lack of rich language and literacy experiences in their earlier schooling. So, it's a huge problem. The body of knowledge that is the science of reading, as my colleagues have said, has research to support that all of these components are necessary. And it's important that we keep in mind that when we are reading, we're reading language. So the more language we know, the more knowledge we have in that language, the more we're going to see positive correlations with reading comprehension. And just like encoding is a reciprocal process to decoding, I also have to say writing is that reciprocal process to reading comprehension. So we have to make sure that we are leveraging writing, from handwriting to spelling to sentence level writing to composition. We have to make sure that we're also integrating writing, and what a great tool it is to further reading comprehension as well. So let's make sure we have high expectations of our students. Let's make sure we're reading those challenging texts out loud if the students cannot access them yet. If the data says that they are unable to access those texts on their own, let's read them out loud. Let's have discussions. Ask your kiddos those deep questions. Get them thinking. Get them inspired to talk about. And let's also ensure that our foundational skills instruction is explicit, systematic, cumulative, diagnostic, prescriptive, taught to automaticity.
Again, I'm over here just churning. But you've got to go back to one thing you talked about, Carrie, and I want everybody to chime in on this too, because every day someone will always ask us to please lean into those middle adolescent secondary learners and the challenges that they face. And you hit the nail on the head with regard to why they are where they are now with those deficiencies and those needs, because those holes and gaps or instruction was not provided to them initially in their early grades. So let's just stay here just for a minute I see some people saying, keep going. So let's talk a little bit. Let's stay here on our secondary learners beyond the early grades. Let's talk specifically to that audience right now. So Carrie, you wanna start?
So this is an area that we are developing some resources for right now. And I taught at a high school for students with learning differences. So these babies are like on my shoulders all the time. They have such complex learning needs that it's really hard. But, you know, beginning with our school-based data, who are those really struggling readers that we need to target? And then using a decision-making flowchart to determine their specific needs is really helpful. And really, to be successful, I was talking to Sharon Vaughn, and we need to have an evidence-aligned intervention. And in order to really fully support them, it needs to be a school-wide approach, right? Content area instructors, you have so much to do. And at the same time, for your students to be able to access your content, they need to be able to read it. They need to be able to comprehend it. So think as a team, how can you convene to help them further their reading comprehension? So stay tuned to the Reading League social media this year. We'll have further resources to help students in this area.
Thank you for that, Carrie. Julie or Jessica, any other thoughts on our secondary audience?
Yeah, I think it comes back to, you know, I think there are some things when we think about our primary school learners, we're going to think about something similarly, right? Like we're going to think about looking at those data and seeing, are there weaknesses in word recognition skills? Are there weaknesses in language comprehension skills? Let's be really targeted in what we do. I think also some cross-cutting ideas there is we want to stay targeted. We also want to stay playful. It's just going to look a little bit different. But we want to, in our classrooms with their youngest learners, keep it noisy sometimes. And we want that with our older learners too. We want to give them chance to discuss and work with and apply what they're doing. Another thing I keep in mind a lot when I think about adolescent learners is, are we being relevant to them? Are we thinking about who they are and how we can really affirm their identities? And that doesn't mean just sticking to their own worlds, but bringing them beyond their world. Like sometimes the most interesting thing to students is something that they, you know, is really outside of what they're seeing in their community. And sometimes what's really going to grab them is seeing that connection to their community and that affirming view into themselves. And so when we think about adolescents, this came up at the beginning, actually, how you were saying, Cassandra, like this isn't separate from motivation, right? We want to think about the science of reading framework, and we want to think about frameworks that really show us what is good for motivation and what is good for showing students that they're valued, even if they're coming to us with gaps based on like not having all the opportunities they needed to learn. They're valued and they're welcome, and there's so much we can do for them. Yeah.
Thank you, Julie.
I'm going to stop there.
And you're getting all the hearts and all the feedback. That's really good. So let me do this. I'm looking at the notion of the tips and the hints and what we can do and how we can support. So let's just go there. Let's just shift into action, right? Because, you know, you think about the saying, you can't teach what you don't know. Or forgive my vernacular, you can't give what you ain't got, right? So what can we put into action at the end of the day? We know that the science of reading is a body of research, big, expansive body of research that supports effective teaching. But what does that teaching actually look like? How can we translate understanding of the science of reading and all those insights that it provides and turn that into our day-to-day practice, our day-to-day routines, our day-to-day pedagogy? So Julie, I'm wondering if you'll start and speak for from the perspective of, you know, more of the language comprehension piece and what it can look like in the classroom, right? And then perhaps we'll hear from Jessica about the phonics and word recognition component, and then finally Carrie, right? So then Julie, think about this. When teachers know what to look for in a reading curriculum and can finally identify the weaknesses in existing programs, what comes next? How do we level up? How do we support them in speaking to their administrators and their decision makers about the advice of what to do to tackle those conversations so that they can finally get what they need in their hands so that they can do better because now they know better? Julie, you start.
Absolutely. I hear a couple of things there, so I will answer what I can. I think the first part about how do we level up and give, I think it comes back to that idea of like rooting it in our data and rooting it in our context and what we can do together based on who we are and organize as adults around our context and how that relates to the science of reading. I think when I think of the science of reading, I've always thought to myself, what works for who under what conditions, right? And so we want to know about, there are some universal principles, but ultimately it's our students here. And we're going to take those universal principles, that great instruction, and think about what are the shifts we need here right now based on who our students are. And so for many students, and I love that you said this, Carrie, what ultimately is going to trip them up over the long term is that we need to be building language and knowledge from the start, right? And that kind of can be an invisible need in the early years because it's harder to assess. We're not seeing it when those early decodable readers don't have the language demands of what they need to be doing later. And so I want to bring this question to the idea that, okay, what does then good language comprehension instruction look like if what you're finding is for many of your students, we need to be doing more earlier to build that up? And I think, you know, we want to be similarly intentional and explicit and cumulative. Those words we're hearing all the time when we're talking about structured literacy. We want to be just as intentional with language as we are with word recognition skills. But we can't just port over the exact same strategies, right? Language is, it's a different kind of domain. It's a different kind of area than word recognition skills. And so we're going to be, again, those cross-cutting principles, explicit and cumulative and intentional, but But we're going to look at this a little bit of a different way. And so first, I think it's really important to honor the relationship between language and knowledge, right? That we're going to anchor language building in rich texts and big ideas. And these big ideas, when I say that, I don't mean let's study cause and effect for a week, to be honest. I'm not saying let's study acrostic poems for a week. I'm saying let's think about a multifaceted, content-based, engaging idea that brings learners, like I said earlier, to worlds beyond their own and affirms and deepens their understandings of themselves. So these texts that we start with, like Carrie was saying, read them aloud. This isn't just about what students are yet able to read at their own, like not constrained by their word recognition skills. We're going to bring texts that feature big ideas connected to science and social studies, and we're going to make them a springboard for talking and writing so that our classrooms have these moments where we have students doing deep thinking, even our little ones doing deep thinking. I see someone saying mirrors and windows. Yes, yeah, so we're not going to think about science of reading and all these other frameworks for good instruction separately. They're connected. So thank you. Yes, we're bringing that up. So we want deep thinking and we want moments for noisy talk, right? Carrie was saying, we think about reading, we think about writing. We think about reading, we think about oral language. This is all connected. Clearly I get really excited. I'm going to slow down.
There's a thing that's going on. I told you. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's you, really. You bring this energy and I'm just like, okay, I'm with Cassandra. I'm talking.
They bring the energy. They're getting me fired up. All the in the chat. They're getting me fired up. But yes, thank you, Julie. Keep going. Yes.
The second thing, so we start with big ideas and a meaningful context, and then we teach the components of language, right? We're going to teach academic words, not a huge laundry list of words, but a small list of meaningful words that matter for what we're studying. We're going to raise morphological awareness and scaffold sophisticated syntactic structures and teach word learning strategies. So we will have direct teaching in this model. It's just that it's couched in meaningful context and it's brought out into authentic practice, right? We're going to do something with it. We're going to talk, we're going to write, we're going to read and think. The third thing, which maybe doesn't sound as fun, but I swear it's fun, is this idea of an instructional routine. This is like phonics isn't boring and routines aren't boring. Routines free up our mind to be able to engage with rigor when we know that there's consistency and predictability and routines in place. And so part of building language is supplying and building that consistency in our classroom, having routines that even build up year after year. Your think, pair, share in kindergarten can be your think, pair, share in first grade. And then over time, the content of what we're talking about is going to deepen and get more complex. Yes, I'm even going off my own train of thought. I wasn't going to go into the think, pair, share example, but this idea of routines and then building that complexity throughout a unit and over time, like I was saying. And so often what that might mean is we're starting with direct instruction in words. And then we have a culminating project where we're putting those words to use and we're sort of integrating those skills that we've been building together. And I'm talking way too much and I want to hear from other people and I'm going to stop.
Thank you, Julie. That's wonderful. Good stuff.
I can piggyback off of that idea of routines because that's really a lot of what your foundational skills lessons are going to look like. They're going to be very routine-based. And so I think something about teaching can be very isolating. You can feel very alone once you're in a classroom. You're not seeing other people teach like you did when you were in college observing teachers. And so I think that is why pages like mine have become so popular, is because we are modeling these routines so that you can see what they look like firsthand. And that's what's so great about letters is all the videos that you see in classrooms of what these practices actually look like. And to reiterate the noisy part as well, phonics should be noisy. It's a red flag if you go in and it's phonics time and it's quiet in the classroom. No, it needs to be loud and noisy. Students are listening, repeating, applying the skills to every single task. So I just am going to list off some key points to a solid foundational skills lesson in whole group. It's going to include review of your past concepts, review those sound spelling correspondences, phonemic awareness that's tied directly to that lesson, direct instruction of a new concept, word blending, as well as word encoding. We want to be spelling as well. And sometimes we leave that spelling part out, but I know Carrie mentioned about writing. Spelling is part of that. So we've got to work on spelling as well. And it's very routine based. And when students know a routine and they know what to expect, your classroom will run like clockwork. I know that a lot of teachers are struggling with behaviors in the classroom, but if your routine is not structured and students don't know what to expect, that can feel stressful. Even as an adult, when you don't know what to expect, you feel kind of stressed. So having that routine really helps your students get into a rhythm. And I just want to quote Dr. Anita Archer. She would say, everyone does everything. So make sure everyone is involved. No hands raised policy. Everyone is doing all of the work together. So, and I'd love to hear what Carrie has to say as well.
I love that. And I highly recommend, if you ever get a chance to see Anita in action, it's the same thing if you attend one of her sessions. Everyone does everything. You're not going to like sit back on your phone during that session.
And she will call you out by name.
She will, she'll like stand right next to you. Well, you know, I mean, she's not a huge force, but she's a big presence. It's great. I love it. And it's like those classrooms, my gosh, imagine being in a classroom that is as excited and energized as she makes her PD. So I love that you mentioned that, Jessica. So somebody asked in the chat, how do I know if my materials are aligned to the science of reading? And that's something that the Reading League has been discussing since before my time, but I was with them during some of these discussions. So when I was at the Rhode Island Department of Education, as we saw this buzzword kind of come to life, right? And as we saw these curricular materials slap the science of reading sticker on their products. And that's when the curriculum evaluation, formerly called the curriculum evaluation tool, but now the guidelines, is another free resource that we offer. And this will help you walk through all of those components of literacy to determine whether they are aligned to the science of reading or not. And I implore you, when you first open, we call them the SEGs, right? C-E-G, the SEGs, go down to the research section, because it's real nerdy and really great. But you can be sure in that all of the aligned practices are grounded, are substantiated by empirical, scientifically based research. And that, like all the research section that everybody glosses by, that's the science of reading. That's the body of knowledge. And the practices that you will review your instructional materials for are taken directly from that research. So that's one one thing that makes the SEGs great. The other thing is that there's other instructional material reviews out there, but none of them take a look at those red flag practices. What are those practices that are not aligned to the science of reading? What are those practices that could waste those precious instructional minutes? I know y'all are trying to figure out how to get like your bathroom time down so that you can have more minutes, right? We don't want to have instructional practices that are going to take away from those precious minutes too, nor instructional practices that could have, could leave some students behind. So use the curriculum evaluation guidelines, use the reviewer workbook that's linked there. You can just look through your instructional materials, talk about it in a PLC, see how your suite of assessment aligns to the science, see how your materials align, and how to address it, right? There's no perfect curriculum. So this is really just an informative tool to get you talking, to identify those practices, how can you address it? Or if you are making a decision, how can you look to see if there are just too many red flag practices and these are not the materials for you, right? Also stay tuned on May 1st, hopefully, if I am still alive by then, we will be releasing some curriculum navigation reports, where we are doing our due diligence to try to actually review the most widely used curricula in the US. Those folks that have been brave enough to allow us to review their materials, I should say. And those a group of those will be posted May 1st with more ongoing through the years.
My. Y'all are busy. And we so appreciate that. And I know our teachers are just soaking this up. All the links are coming through the chat. Go to them now, copy them now. Make sure you have all these amazing resources. This is a great time for a little break. Let's break for a quiz. You ready? So everybody get your fingers ready to do your chat. Or if you want a thumbs up, if you think it's true, that's fine. But let's do a little bit of a true or false. Okay, listen carefully. True or false? Reading instruction is only needed until third grade. Next question. Competent teachers do not use published reading programs. Next question. Avoiding published reading programs empowers teachers and enhances the professional status of teaching. Next question. Teaching phonics, word attack, and spelling skills directly to children is harmful. Next question. Reading a lot is the best way to overcome a reading problem. Next question. Children should be taught to guess words on the basis of meaning and syntax. Last question. Skills must always be taught in the context of literature. We thank you for playing. We're looking at all of the emojis and all of the chats. So we're kind of assessing how you all did. We're going to keep this in mind as we move to the next part of this discussion, because now we want to talk about professional development. So in her 2020 white paper for the Reading League, Dr. Louisa Motes, author of Letters, said, and I quote, "Evidence to guide our practices is stronger than it has ever been. The preparation and professional development of teachers must be better aligned with decades of reading science," end quote. She also notes that, quote, "Consistency among university core curricula for teachers, state standards and curriculum frameworks for school children, and teacher licensing standards could eliminate the confusing and contradictory learning experiences that teachers often encounter," end quote. So for our discussion, based on the abundance of myths about teaching reading, like the ones we just did, all of those were false. And thank you so much, because you all knew it was just not true. All that was false. So based on those myths and thinking about these thoughts from Dr. Motes, can each of you share your perspective on how teachers can really navigate through all of this misinformation and how they can advocate for their own professional development that aligns with the evidence wherever they might be serving in their capacity around the country? So let's, Julie, will you start that, and then we'll move to Carrie and then Jessica?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dispelling.
Wait, did we say Julie? Yes, we did. You did. Yeah, okay. Okay, I think I hear two questions. So the first is navigating learning on your own when there is just this like sea of information about what it means to teach and use the science of reading. And for me, it's all about, I mean, thank you, Carrie, for bringing up all the great citations that are in the Reading League resources. Cause for me it's all about the source and the citations in the source. And I hold researchers themselves to the standard. We can listen to researchers and hear what they say, but if we have a platform, what we are saying should be based in evidence and we should cite those sources. And so for example, and I saw this somewhere in the chat, there are US Department of Ed practice guides that I regularly turn back to, and they're written by teams of reputable multidisciplinary scholars who were held up to a rigorous standard of truth when they were creating those guides. And so generally, those are the kinds of places where I start, and I don't turn further than resources like that until I have a good grasp on what they say, and then I can wade through the rest. Still, best case scenario, teachers' self-directed learning is a supplement to school-based professional development, right? It's something we do because we are lifelong learners, but it's connected to something we're doing as a team rooted in our own context, which brings me to the second part of your question about how to advocate for good PD. And so again, like, let's remind ourselves that the science of reading is connected to other frameworks. So it's often talked about in terms of how children learn to read or people learn to read. But the science of reading exists with another important science, which is how we learn as adults, as professionals, to do good work. And these sciences are connected, and you can't really have one without the other. And that's beholden on schools and district leaders to create the conditions for adult success if we're going to improve children's outcomes. So back to that needs analysis. What kind of professional development is in place where you teach? And what should it be? And the science of professional learning sheds light on that. And I have citations. Now I can't find it, but I looked in a book to find this answer. I don't make this stuff up because I don't know. But learning that sticks is not one and done workshops, right? It's longer duration with time for collaboration and discussions and meetings, and is followed by application in the classroom. And hopefully that application is tied to curricular tools, right? We have our professional learning, and then we have what we're using to inform our teaching. And in the best case, those two should meet. NPD should, that's rooted in evidence about how adults learn, include really clear examples also for how to put techniques into action. Exemplary but relatable examples, classroom videos or case studies, sometimes opportunities to view ourselves on video and see what that's like. But my last thought, and I'm continuing to talk, but my last thought I would say is this is all about good working conditions, right? You can't learn and move your practice forward if you're not in a place where there's safety and risk-taking and non-evaluative feedback, which again kind of stands on leaders. Like it's on them to make that safe space for us to try something and really dig into it. So yeah, it's on all of us. But I know Jessica has some thoughts on that.
Sorry. Did anybody else's brain go there when Julie said she had a book? She looked at a book and I was like, take a look. It's in a book.
I have a t-shirt that says it. I was like, am I wearing it today?
That's what happens this whole week is we just keep one thing kind of merges into the other. So forgive me, Carrie. I had to say it. Forgive me, Carrie. Go ahead.
Are you kidding? Who's not singing it in their head right now? Like nobody. Amazing. Yes, I agree. I think that this is sort of like two different questions. And I don't just do everything Julie just said. That was brilliant. That was awesome. addressing misconceptions, I feel like, is kind of my full-time job. So I will share an article that I wrote in Language Magazine, and also in the defining guide, if that's useful, we have a list of, you know, we have the definition of what the science of reading is, and we have a list of what it's not. So grab a hard copy. It's downloadable at no cost on the Reading League website. It's the reason why we wrote it to help in these conversations. Also, we have talked a lot of the misconceptions that are specific to those that are supporting English learners and emergent bilingual students. So I would recommend reading the Reading League's joint statement, which is linked on the Reading League's ELEB page of the Reading League Compass. We address misconceptions in the science of reading, and we address practices that are happening in schools that are not aligned to the science of reading, that are happening under the name of the science of reading, that could be problematic for ELEB students. So listening to reading research is good for everyone. And that's what the science of reading is. It's reading and listening to the research that we have on how students learn to read. It's good for everyone, right? What is bad is when that word is sort of tokenized and meant as an umbrella term to cover these practices that are not aligned to the science. So hopefully that will help as well. So, and then as far as advocating for knowledge building PD, we have some suggestions on the educator page of the Reading League Compass. Some things that are really important to include when you do have PD, for example, PD is different than PD for implementing your curriculum, right? It should be knowledge building. It should be agnostic from the curriculum so that you have that knowledge base that you can use no matter what materials are in front of you. Also, all administrators should attend the PD, right? Because they're getting phone calls every day from these publishers, from these salespeople that are saying, buy my product, check this box, right? So they need to participate in the PD so that they can understand and build their knowledge alongside you. Also, that one and done, as you mentioned earlier, PD doesn't work. It needs to be integrated into your instruction. You need to have some sort of a practicum experience. You know that's where you learn. I did my OG practicum. I once got 13 pages of feedback from my fellow. It was overwhelming, but I sure did learn a lot, right? also, that you need to have the coaches to support educators when you're implementing those newly learned practices, and that PD can't just focus on a single aspect of instruction, like phoneme awareness or phonics, right? You can't patch the problem. You have to learn about all the aspects of literacy development.
So good. So good.
And I just want to add, in terms of requesting specific training or programs, I know so much is out of the teacher's control. Some of those decisions are not up to you. So just know that teacher knowledge is your superpower, though. If you had one, it's that. Attend what you can, like this amazing Science of Reading week. What a fantastic week this has been. And I want to quote Pam Kastner. She says, every teacher deserves to know the science of reading, and every child deserves a teacher who knows it. So when you have that research and data to back yourself up, then you can tackle those difficult conversations. You can advocate, you can request things because you have that knowledge to back you up. Look to leaders like Lexia, look to leaders like the Reading League. They will guide you in the right direction if you're not sure if something is misinformation or not. And then also I want to mention Reading Rockets is a really great resource. They have a self-paced course called Reading 101. It's free. So if you're just looking to start somewhere and you don't have money to put towards professional development, that's a place to start. And they do have a new website called Reading Universe. It's kind of in its beta stage, but it's got some great resources on it. And I also want to say, no one knows it all. No one. So give yourself some grace and know that we're all forever learners. We don't ever know it all.
That is so good. Oh my gosh, you guys, I'm looking at the time. And we're at the end. We are officially at the end. But you know, we have all these teachers with us. We cannot leave them without one final statement. I know we were gonna probably give y'all a minute before. We don't have a minute, ladies. We don't have a minute. But I want them to hear from you all one last time. If we're talking about teachers, be the ultimate expert in the science of reading, what else can you impart to them as they're trying to implement these literacy changes in their classrooms? What can we do to help them keep that momentum? Say something. I'm gonna give each one of you all an opportunity to just formalize a statement. Give them one last nugget, give them one last push, give them one last nudge, one last cheer, get it in your head, because these are our most critical audience members. Yes, we saved the best for last, right? We wanted our teachers on this last day to culminate our science of reading. Ladies, give them something. Don't let them leave here without this one last thing to consider to really encourage them on this journey. Who wants to go first? Pressure is on.
I'll jump in. I haven't gone first yet. Okay. Build knowledge. Find the power to use the knowledge you've built. Use it to empower your students in language, in literacy. Use it to empower yourself and your career, you guys. You are the heroes. Let's use it to continue to teach your students, but consider how to use it in an increased capacity. We need knowledgeable educators, but friends, we need educated leaders. Become a coach, a school leader. Consider applying to be an adjunct at a local college or university. Think about district leadership. Think about working at your State Department of Education. How can you continue to grow your knowledge and inspire others? Because every day, each one of you all are on my shoulders, inspiring me.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you. Who's next?
Do you want to go, Julie, or you want me to
No,
go?
I know we have a similar idea. You go ahead. I'll build
Okay. Up. Okay. Make small changes that can make a big impact. So it doesn't have to be this huge shift or huge change. On my social channels, I share little swaps called do this, not that. And so teachers have told me those swaps are really helpful. So for example, swap out, check the picture to let's look at this word, let's break it down into sounds. So just make little swaps that can make a big impact.
And to build from that, because yeah, Jessica and I had the same idea. We did note that before. So I'm going to say it again a different way, as is the theme of this, is that doing it all isn't sustainable for change, right? For anything in our lives. Like, I can't just become a great exerciser all at once. I have to kind of do this a little bit at a time, because that's not where I've been at. And so we don't want burnout for teachers. We don't want quick, intense change that fades. We want to consider with starting with a meaningful change that builds up incrementally. And then there will be a critical threshold where powerful outcomes happen and they can now be sustained and something that we do for the long run.
Love it, love it, love it. I'm blowing kisses to each of you. Thank you so much for your time today, for your amazing insight. Everyone has just soaked up so much from this incredible discussion. Everyone that's attending live, listen, every day we've been inspired and more inspired and more inspired. And I thank you so much for joining us for our second annual Science of Reading Week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It's been absolutely amazing. And as Lexia celebrates 40 years at the forefront of this Science of Reading revolution, we are so grateful for your commitment and partnership to this process. So yes, we're looking at 40 years on the screen. If you would like to see our journey, please get a picture of that QR code and you can watch the video that talks about the future of literacy, a clear path forward. That's the story of what we're doing here, our value here at Lexia Learning. On behalf of all of us here at Lexia, especially Kim Herron, Brittany Beaulieu, Jamie Meter, Laurie Taylor, Joy Ryer, Haley Iyer, I love that, Vice President of Marketing George Scotty, our President at Lexia, Nick Gata, as well as our amazing partners at EdWeb, Rachel Garcia, Regina Drips, Mary Cipolla, Michelle Germano, Renee Drips, and their founder and CEO, Lisa Schmucky, along with the most spectacular cast of presenters and speakers ever assembled on the planet Earth, the LeVar Burton, Dr. Liz Brooks, Paula White, Rich Zigarovich, Dr. Aaron Hamilton, Mickey Ray, Ebony Johnson, Carrie Larkin, Jessica Farmer, Carrie Curto, and Julie Harris. We thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, I am Cassandra Wheeler, Director of Letters at Lexia for State Success, and it has been my pleasure being your host and moderator and your cousin Cassandra during our second annual Lexia Science of Reading Week. Whew, I hate it's come to an end. It has been blissful. I send kisses to all of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we look forward to doing this all again next year. We look forward to seeing you all right back here again next year. Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. Mwah, mwah, mwah. And again, Jessica, Carrie, Julie, hats off to you, to all our teachers. We bow deeply and thank you so much for everything that you do for your students every single day. We champion you. We support you. Thank you all so much. Lexia family, EdWeb, thank you all so much. This has been amazing. And the love is still coming. Look at the screen. They're not ready to leave. I know it, right? Last year we had 5 days, Monday through Friday. But today, this week, today ends our Science of Reading Week. And we're just grateful, grateful, grateful. Learned so much. I know their notebooks are just thick from just all the notes that they made from the three of you all today. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Thank y'all so much.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.